podcasts of the WDWNT Network are made possible each and every week by listeners like you and the following fantastic sponsors. Magical Travel is an authorized Disney vacation planner and is always ready to assist you in making your next trip to the Walt Disney World Resort, Disneyland Resort, or aboard the Disney Cruise Line even more magical. If you book a trip to the Walt Disney World Resort between August 16th and October 3rd, 2009, you can get a free quick service meal, table service meal, and snack for everyone in your party for every day of your vacation. For more information on this special offer and many, many more, visit MagicalTravel.com and book your next Disney trip today.
I'm not sponging for rum. It be gold I'm after.
Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-yay.
There's no turning back now.
Like a grand and miraculous spaceship, our planet has sailed through the universe of time.
Put up 2, 5, and 7.
Launch us now!
Look at the guy in the goofy mask.
That's not a mask.
Sorry, lady.
I'm sure to do better next time. It was my first flight, and I'm still getting used to my programming.
You made it. I knew you would.
Hi, hello, and welcome. Welcome to our show.
Welcome to the WDW News Today podcast, a variety show celebrating the Walt Disney World Resort and its fans. At this time, please welcome your party host, Tom Corliss.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another celebration of the WDWNT podcast. This is episode number 93 for May 10th, 2009. To kick off this week's show, we'll have your Walt Disney World Resort news and rumor report. In this week's report, we'll be discussing the new Stitches Supersonic Celebration show over at the Magic Kingdom, some new details about the tequila bar coming in 2010 to the Mexico Pavilion at Epcot, and the 20th anniversary festivities that were held over at Disney's Hollywood Studios last week. Following that, to wrap up this shorter edition of the show, we have a great Walt Disney World-based discussion that you voted for. In this week's opinionated roundtable discussion, we will be revealing our favorite smells of the Walt Disney World Resort. While this may not be our most informative discussion ever, it certainly is one of our more fun and out-of-control ones that we certainly hope you will enjoy. So what are you waiting for? Let's celebrate another week of Walt Disney World information and fun on the WDW News Today podcast. We now interrupt your regularly scheduled podcast for an important announcement from the WDWNT Network. Hi, this is Tom Corliss, owner of the WDWNT Network, reminding you to join us once again for our live interactive program from the entire WDWNT Network on Sunday, May 17th, 2009. On this live show, we will be taking your questions, as well as providing some special segments you won't be able to hear on our normal podcasts. So be sure to join us from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday, May 17, 2009, for yet another edition of WDWNT Live. The show is hosted via Ustream on WDWNewsToday.com. All you have to do is click the WDWNT Live button in our navigation bar or in the sidebar, and it'll take you right to the show between the hours of 9 and 11 p.m. Eastern on Sunday, May 17th. We hope to see you there.
It's time for your Disney Weekend Update. Let's tune in to this week's Walt Disney World News and Rumor Report.
Now time for this week's Walt Disney World Resort News and Rumor Report. Joining us for the report this week, Mr. Anthony Iacullo.
Hello.
The Mayor, Justin Heyman.
How's it going?
Scott Smith.
Hey, everyone.
And Kyle Duffield.
Hey, everybody.
Let's dive right in because we've got a lot of news to cover, some observations from our many trips to Walt Disney World, and, of course, news in general. Starting at the Magic Kingdom, Stitch's Supersonic Celebration has finally debuted in Tomorrowland, officially as of May 3rd. And in the show, as we previously reported, Stitch joins in a Galactic Day celebration hosted by Tip Trendo of TNN, the Tomorrowland News Network, along with his Galactic Girls, Luna, Solara, Celestia, and, say it with me, Nancy! As they present dance numbers and guest interactions with Stitch. So, basically, this show has a number of dance numbers for Tip, the Galactic Girls, two robots that Stitch actually builds on screen, and as well, there are portions where the music and such stops, and Stitch actually talks to some of the people in the crowd, since it is that living character initiative technology that you'll find at the Laugh Floor or over at Turtle Talk with Crush. I did get a chance to see this on May 4th, and I kind of like it. I mean, it's a little long at 25 minutes, and maybe a little less Stitch interaction would be positive, but I think the performers do a fantastic job. I mean, the two robot performers are extremely, extremely talented breakdancers. And again, it's not something you typically would expect to see at Walt Disney World, but I think it's a really welcome addition. Again, this area was, you know, absolute dead space for a long time. And, you know, the Galaxy Palace Theater, which it, I guess you could say, replaced, was never really used except for Magic Music Days. So this is really a positive change. I think you're going to see a lot of changes to this show over the next few weeks as they sort of find out what works and what doesn't. I know a lot of us here were very excited by the more references to past Tomorrowland attractions that are found in the show. Of course, we talked about the references in the pre-show last week or 2 weeks ago, I believe. And we talked about all those references. But what's really cool in this show, when Stitch is building the robot, one of the heads he could choose is actually the Timekeeper's head. And he purchases the robots from Robomart, which is a division of XS Tech, which, as many of you know, was the company from Alien Encounter. Just little stuff like that. So all around, the only part of the show I really had a problem with was the living character Stitch, because it's really pales in comparison, I think, to Crush over at the Seas with Nemo and Friends and the Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor. I think the animation still has a lot of work to go, but the show itself and the performers did a fantastic job, and just really, really cool.
It's interesting that the first example of it has still proven to be the best. You would think that they'd get better with each example.
Well, I think the Laugh Floor has come a long way. I think the Laugh Floor has surpassed Turtle Talk now. After seeing, absolutely, actually giving the Laugh Floor a good 3 or 4 run-throughs this trip, they have really fixed up that show. It is completely different from what it was when it opened. Turtle Talk is still fantastic, but I think the Laugh Floor is one notch above. Stitch is at the bottom floor at the moment. I think they still got a lot of work to go there.
Well, it's good that they're pulling in. They're kind of pulling Tomorrowland together in a more cohesive story, especially with references in the pre-show to, like, the TTA and Space Mountain, referring to other stuff around you. So it's,
yeah, the Chamber of Commerce that also includes what is it, Anti-Gravity's Galactic
Anti-Gravity's, yeah.
The TTA and all that. The pre-show is fantastic, as well as some of the references in the show itself, and all around well done. Again, Stitch only has like 3 or 4 selected kind of movements on the screen, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, it's really obvious.
Yeah. Hopefully they'll fix that, but, you know. And then, of course, when Stitch comes out at the end dressed in his Elvis costume, there's a lot of fun to be had there as well.
You mean his special party outfit?
Yes, his special party
outfit. Because the Elvis name is owned by the Elvis estate.
Yet they play an Elvis song. Stop, yes. Walk, and Listen. At the end. And, of course, many of our Meet the Robinsons fans would be extremely happy to know that they actually use a song from Meet the Robinsons to open and close the show. They use, what is it, The Future is Alive?
Future is Alive today.
And there goes Kyle singing it.
It's been stuck in my head since I saw it last week.
And it's a really a fitting song for Tomorrowland. So there's a lot of positives from the show. I know some people have been negative on it, but I think it's mostly good.
You know, I think this show has a lot of room to grow.
I definitely
agree with everybody saying that Stitch is really the downside of this whole thing.
I don't think it's the character even. I think it's just the fact that the living character in this particular show is still very rough around the edges.
Yeah, I think the one cool thing, though, is that they take pictures of certain people in the audience and he'll point to them. I think that's the one cool thing. But other than that, I think it has room to grow. And I think that in time, the show will probably be better than what it is today.
Yeah, and one thing that was really cool and I thought was pretty funny was at one point Stitch points out someone in the crowd and says, "I recognize you from somewhere. Where do I know you from?" And then he remembers that it's from Space Prison, and they actually put the person's face on a wanted poster.
There's
some really cool touches to this particular show that the other shows don't have, Monsters, Inc. and Turtle Talk, but still I think there's a lot of work to be done.
Absolutely.
I think it's just going through its growing pains right now. Give it a couple months.
Yeah.
And I think it'll definitely be to more of a point where it's probably a little more to a level of Monsters, Inc. or even Turtle Talk.
Yeah, and if you think about when both of those shows debuted, they were very, very different from what they are today. Turtle Talk, obviously, because they've moved theaters. That's an obvious change, but the show structure itself was very different when that first opened as well. So,
same with Monsters. Monsters, I think, has changed dramatically.
Monsters was very, very different. But now they've got a pretty good show structure that works. And, 25 minutes is a little long for this Stitch show. But I wouldn't doubt that this will probably get pared down about 20 minutes. And we'll see a nice filled out version very soon.
Yeah, there's a lot of fat they could trim.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, maybe some of the boots were made for walking. Galactic Girls, maybe. But again, you could see a YouTube video on our main site, and I know Matt Paul is actively working on getting us a video for the soon-to-reopen WDWNTube Disney Parks video site. Our next piece of news, an update on a rumor we reported a few months ago. The toy guns that are sold in Frontierland and in Caribbean Plaza at the exit of Pirates of the Caribbean have finally been produced in those bright colors we were talking about. You can now purchase those guns in any of their styles, in either a red or a light blue. So, no surprise here. Of course, this is something we've seen with toy guns all across the country. Switching to these brighter colors this way, there is no confusion as to whether or not they are real or fake. So,
they have all but disappeared from, like, regular toy stores.
Yeah, and I think that was something that was done a long, long time ago in regular toy stores. So, I think, in fact, Disney's a little behind, but it's sad that, the world has come to a point where you're not going to see those famous brown guns in Frontierland anymore or Caribbean Plaza, but...
Yeah.
I'm shocked they still have them, period. Because, like I said, they've all but been removed completely from regular Toys R Us's and stuff like that.
Well, I think they've been such a fixture of the Magic Kingdom-style parks for such a long time. You look back, I think that was one of the few pieces of merchandise that actually goes back to, the 1950s at Disneyland when they first opened.
That's true.
That was one of the few pieces of merchandise that has made it all these years and has still been as timeless. So I appreciate them trying to keep it there. And if this was a change that needed to be made to keep these guns on shelves, then good for Disney.
And who's to say a pirate wouldn't paint their gun light blue?
Yes. Moving on to our next piece of news, an updated version of the Celebrate a Dream Come True parade debuted at the Magic Kingdom on May 3rd. Among the changes, the villain's float has been completely removed. Chip, Dale, and Pluto now appear after the Grand Marshal vehicle. Foul Fellow and Gideon have joined Geppetto, who has also left the Pinocchio float, and they're now in front of that float. Abu, the genie, and Jafar from Aladdin are now in front of the Aladdin float, while Winnie the Pooh has been completely removed from that unit. Captain Hook, Mr. Smee, Tweedledum, and Tweedledee are now in front of the Castle Carousel unit. Susie, Perla, Lady Tremaine, Anastasia, and Drizella, if you're wondering who those are the wicked stepsisters from Cinderella, are now in front of the Princess unit. Lilo and Stitch from Lilo and Stitch, as well as Jesse and Woody from Toy Story, are now in front of the Finale Castle unit, while Baloo and King Louie are on the actual float. The showstop for the parade has also been updated, and some of the characters actually come off of the float and dance with guests, along with the now reduced number of parade dancers. Overall, this is shocking, but, you know, pretty much all the suggestions we made on this show when this thing first debuted have been corrected. Sure, we did lose the villain's float, which is, you know, indeed a loss, but I think overall, this is now a very respectable 3 o'clock parade. I think it's actually worth seeing now. When I saw this a few days earlier, sure, the showstop was a little messy and such, but definitely cleaned it up quite nicely, and I'm very happy with the current state of the parade, absolutely.
Why would they get rid of the villain's float? I would think that'd be a very popular thing. Have they given up on that franchise, or...
I don't think they've given up on that franchise by any means. I think there's still a fresh batch of villains merchandise that comes into the Villains in Vogue store over at the studios. I think basically what happened here was it really didn't make a lot of sense for them to be in this parade. With the theme being what it was, very upbeat, very energetic.
I guess that's a very good point. That is, yeah.
And I mean, Captain Hook and Jafar have been put in places... Well, Captain Hook wasn't on the villain's float, but he is a villain. Have been put in places where they make sense in this parade. And they are two characters that actually work quite well where they are. So the villains are still very well present here. But I think overall the parade flows much, much better than it did before. I think the villain's float removal was necessary. And, you know, quite frankly...
That actually makes a lot of sense because Maleficent is not known as a party animal.
Yeah. I mean, Captain Hook and Jafar are two... villains that have more often been in more comical situations throughout time, whether it be in the films or in the park. So, yeah.
Very true.
Yeah, I think these changes are just great. I mean, we saw the original version at the meet, the WWNT meet, and then I got a quick chance to see the new version of the parade. And, you know, it's just great to see all the characters back where they should be, you know, interacting with the guests, you know, shaking hands. And the showstop, you know, it's a little messy, but... I think they can easily fix that as they get used to the new version of the parade. And I think the parade just looks better overall.
Yeah, I think so.
Absolutely.
And it's a little shorter now, as though it wasn't short enough already. But the 2.5 minute or so showstop certainly helps stretch that parade out a little bit. And as well, the parade now only stops once it's cleared the town square area, the first stop. So you can't catch that first stop in the town square area any longer. Now moving over to Epcot, a quick stop at World Showcase in the Mexico Pavilion, where Casa Mexicana, which used to be used as the KidCot location there, has reopened as a store. The merchandise from the shop has been moved. The merchandise from the shop is from the store that was on the other side of the building, and now that store on the other side has been shuttered to make room for what will be the tequila bar coming sometime in 2010. So again, more details on this tequila bar coming. We've been hearing this for a long time. Disney has officially said it's coming in 2010, so it's going to be interesting to see how popular this tequila bar is. And I think the location change idea is much better. It's a little closer to the restaurant, so maybe a better choice where it is now.
Delicious tequila.
Yes. Tequila is not your friend, though. Remember that.
No, absolutely not.
I was told that on the Jungle Cruise. Right. Now moving over to Disney's Hollywood Studios, where just this past Sunday, we celebrated the 20th anniversary of the park, and there was actually quite a few festivities held in honor of that anniversary. First of all, some fancy banners were added at the turnstiles, picturing some original concept art for the park, as well as plenty of Mickey ear balloons, as this year's theme is indeed Celebrate Today. We are celebrating 20 years of the park. Secondly, a short ceremony with director Alberto Dante and Paige Turner, as well as Vice President of the Park, Rylus Carter, was held in the morning. Rylus pulled up in a Streetmosphere character car and gave a nice little talk about some of the old attractions and his memories of the park over 20 years. And then we were all welcomed into Hollywood. Following that, there was, of course, the 20th anniversary cupcake, which many of us can still not get over, both mentally and physically. That cupcake was most certainly a behemoth. That thing was huge, and wow. I mean, if you're watching or listening to the Enhanced Show, you're seeing a picture of that cupcake now.
Yummy. That delicious cupcake.
If not, it's on WDWNewsToday.com, but that was some cupcake, and actually it's going to be available through the end of the month from what we've been told, so if you're going to be there before the end of May, go enjoy a 20th anniversary cupcake. You may want to split it with three people, because it is
huge.
Most certainly huge. After that, we had the release of limited edition pins, which we've already talked about on this show, as well as a pin signing by artist Jason Zucker at the Sorcerer's Hat. He was signing his Hollywood Studios logo pin, which had nothing to do with the 20th anniversary, as well as his graduation pin, which, again, had nothing to do with the anniversary. But Jason is very talented. It was nice to see him over at the Sorcerer's Hat. As well, there was a limited edition T-shirt that was released. You also see that in the Enhanced Show, a nice gray shirt. Unfortunately, it's the Hanes brand, so it's those thin kind of T-shirts that some of us have not been happy with over the last few months. But still a very nice design on the shirt, nonetheless. After that, we had a look back at the creation of our park, a special talk in the Premier Theater hosted by Imagineers Tom Fitzgerald, Eric Jacobson, and Bob Weiss. This was absolutely spectacular. Not only was this really a great look at the history of the park, I mean, they really touched on the entire history. Eric Jacobson worked quite a bit on the Great Movie Ride, so we really got a look into the creation process of that and, you know, how they had to approach different celebrities to be a part of it and changes that happened, such as the, really not a secret, but the changes to the finale, like the where you see Sorcerer Mickey now was actually supposed to be the tornado scene from The Wizard of Oz, or how the what is now the film montage at the end in the theater of sorts was supposed to be the great wizard scene. We had a lot of talk about that. Tom Fitzgerald showed some great clips from the original backlot tour, including the piece with Mel Gibson and Pee Wee Herman. They showed The Lottery, which was the short film made with Bette Midler over on the New York Street area. They showed pieces of the now infamous film of Michael Eisner and Mickey, and Mickey's wearing the Michael Eisner watch, and Michael Eisner's wearing the Mickey watch. They showed a little bit of that, which was fun to look back at that. And just overall, a fantastic session. Unfortunately, they did not allow recording of any kind, so we don't have any of that to share. But it really was special, and I mean, that really made the day right there. Really a lot of fun to see some of that stuff again, and to get a real inside look at some of the creation of the studios and how far it really has come in the last 20 years, which for the most part we've gotten to do on this show as we finished up the countdown last week as well. So definitely a lot of fun there.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing to listen to the Imagineers talk about, you know, the creation of the park, and seeing all those videos just brought back so many memories. It was just amazing to see that.
Yeah, I can't remember who were in the other videos, but
I can remember. There's so many.
Yeah, the Mel Gibson and Pee Wee, most certainly the most memorable.
Absolutely.
And
don't spray it.
And of course, finally, something that you could all still enjoy is a small section at the end of the exhibit space inside Walt Disney One Man's Dream now celebrates the 20th anniversary of Disney's Hollywood Studios. There's a lot of great little exhibits here. I mean, they've moved the model of the Tower of Terror over. They have the Disney magazine from when the Tower of Terror opened on display there, and the Studios Gazette newspaper that was made to promote the opening of the Tower of Terror. And there's all these boards on the walls that show sort of a run through of the history with a lot of concept art that has been seen and a lot of concept art that hasn't been seen before One of great interest was the original concept art for the Pixar Place area. I know they have a case full of sort of MGM Studios and Hollywood Studios collectibles, opening day coins and pins and magazine articles and such. And of course, in the middle, what's really cool is above they have this monitor decked out that plays sort of a 5-minute loop, really showing some of the stuff from the early days, such as the development of the Indiana Jones show and the Great Movie Ride and Michael Eisner dedicating the park. And then underneath that, in the glass display that used to be the Hong Kong Disneyland map, is now the opening day map from the studios, showing the original attractions and the original map, which many of you remember the Disney maps from the 80s. All the parks had like these color-coded boxes that were, you know, black lines, and then all different areas were colored differently. And so they had that map there. And as well, that was what they sold in the Art of Disney. They came out with this sale that was limited to 100 pieces. That was $350 that I unfortunately bought. And it's that original 1989 map with Mickey and Minnie at the bottom blowing out a cake. But just really cool, that nod back to that opening map. And while it's not, they don't have pieces of old attractions and stuff in there, it's still a really fun addition to the One Man's Dream exhibit. And One Man's Dream constantly becoming something you got to go back and check, with the D23 section in there now, and now this. It's great that they're paying so much attention to that.
Yeah, and from what I've heard, and I think some of us have heard it also, that they're planning on keeping some of this stuff at least for a while. So,
yeah, at least through, at the very least through the end of this calendar year.
Yeah,
it will still be there.
Yeah, it sounds like they're going to do what they did with the Epcot Gallery for their 25 over there.
Absolutely, may get a little bit of a shorter run, but again, the studio's got a nice little spread there. Definitely very cool.
Absolutely.
So go check that out. Yeah, of course, if you can't get there before the end of the year, the pictures are on www.newstoday.com, and I took plenty of pictures of the exhibit.
I was unable to attend, but it looked amazing. Yeah. I'm really glad that Disney went all out for this.
Yeah, and I mean, what's really cool here is I remember when we sort of wrapped up our Animal Kingdom coverage, sure, we got to talk about the Joe Rohde talk and the rededication in the morning, but this really has to go down as one of the bigger one-day celebrations in Disney history. They did a lot of really cool stuff. You know, even the Epcot 25th, which again was mostly thrown together last minute, there was a lot of great stuff there, but the studios was ready, and it certainly showed. A great, great day of fun, and as well, a fantastic event from WDW Celebrations, their Studio 20 event, which was just perfect as well. So,
absolutely.
Next piece of news over at the studios, the Club Penguin characters have started to do a meet and greet between the Backlot Tour entrance and Soundstage 1, featuring an icy backdrop complete with a lighthouse, a pirate ship, and my personal favorite, barrels of cream soda. The characters appearing there at the moment are called Rock Hopper and Blue Penguin. The meet and greet is a temporary test and is supposed to come to an end sometime this week. We are not at the moment sure if they will return at this location or somewhere else at a later date. But I'm sure many of you have seen on WDWNewsCity.com the WDW Celebrations team picture with all of us with the Club Penguin characters. I think it's a nice little meet and greet. It's dead space at the studios, and it seemed pretty popular. There was a nice little line whenever they were appearing, so I wouldn't be surprised if this returns or comes back to another location. But does anyone know anything more about the importance of the cream soda to Club Penguin?
No. It's funny because in the Disney store, all this Club Penguin stuff is on clearance, and they're trying to get rid of it, so it's odd that this meet and greet would pop up now.
Well, remember the Disney doing? Whatever the Disney store comes out with usually goes on sale, so it may not be a sign. But the parks have a ton of Club Penguin stuff. And actually, when I came back in January and put up my photo report, I showed that there was a Club Penguin display in the Briar Patch shop at Splash Mountain.
Oh yeah.
So they've been.
So
there
it's
a little
doing
while.
Well.
Disney's making a boatload of cash off this thing, so.
And is there a TV show with it, or is it mostly just like a virtual?
I believe it's just an online,
like, domain
club thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
This was one of the reasons behind getting rid of Virtual Magic Kingdom. This and the Cars 3D realm,
right,
that It has still not gotten up and running, and as well Pirates, that is up and running. But no one here's I don't even think Luke's a Club Penguin member, unfortunately. And he's more in that age group, certainly. Anyway. So Club Penguin, whether or not they will return, stay tuned, we'll let you know. But they seem pretty popular, so I wouldn't be surprised. Moving now, beyond the parks. Big piece of news a few weeks ago. Marty Sklar, the former head of Walt Disney Imagineering, a man who worked very closely with Walt Disney himself, and the only Walt Disney Company employee to attend the openings of all 11 Disney theme parks worldwide, has announced that he finally will be retiring from the company in just a few weeks. This is huge news. Marty, I know, hasn't really been involved in much in the last few years, as he's just been simply the Imagineering ambassador, but this is a great loss. I believe Marty is maybe the last person to work with Walt left. I believe he is, but tremendous loss. Tremendous loss.
He's done a lot for the company, though, so he deserves his due.
He deserves his retirement, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm sad to see him go, but, you know, he, as you guys have said, he deserves his retirement. And
yeah.
Yeah, 55 years is a long time.
That's a long time to work anywhere.
Yes. Absolutely.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess that's a testament to how much he loved his job.
So he was totally devoted to Disney and everything about the theme parks as well. So, I mean, he did so much great work. It's just, it is a loss, but, you know.
After 55 years of doing this podcast, I'm going to retire.
you're going to outwork the existence of this show then.
I definitely wish him luck in all his future endeavors, that's for sure.
Which I'm sure will simply be retirement.
Yeah, you know.
But what I always liked about Marty was he had no problem telling it like it is. Like, if he thought, if he didn't like something that Walt had done, he would
tell Walt.
He basically had the courage to tell Walt, you know, I don't like that. Or tell stories that, you know, didn't necessarily hold him in the greatest light, but, you know, were true to what happened.
And he was Walt's right-hand man, basically, in the days Walt was around with Disneyland. And Marty had a huge role in Disneyland the first years of operation. So, and as well, Marty had a tremendous role in Epcot and the development of that park after Walt had gone and turning that. What's really amazing is that he was one of the few people working on that project that actually was around when Walt was talking about the idea of the city Epcot. And actually being able to turn that into the theme park after seeing Walt's original vision truly makes Epcot what it is today. So Marty can truly be attributed a lot of Epcot's success. Moving on. Next piece of news about merchandise. The great Robert Olszewski, hopefully that's how you pronounce his name. I don't know what I'm saying. Has created another new collectible we can all purchase and enjoy from the Art of Disney. They are called Olszewski Heirloom Boxes and are available thus far in 5 styles at Walt Disney World. The Enchanted Tiki Room, Alice in Wonderland, reminiscent of the Mad Tea Party scene, Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, Peter Pan, which represents the Big Ben scene with Tinkerbell on top of Big Ben, and finally Pinocchio, which is Pinocchio on Geppetto's work table. They range in price from $65 to $85. They look wooden, but they are not. They're fantastic pieces, and from what I know, Disneyland already has a Pirates of the Caribbean piece that is not available yet at Walt Disney World, but another great collectible in addition to the Gallery of Light and as well the Main Street pieces that Olszewski has already made for Walt Disney World. On to our next piece of news. Guests who participate in 2 select events during the Walt Disney World Fall Endurance Series will be eligible for an extra piece of hardware to take home. In a press release earlier this week, Disney said, Disney Sports is creating a one-of-a-kind bonus medal for runners who complete the Fall Race Challenge, competing in 2 of Disney's 3 Fall Endurance events at the Walt Disney World Resort. Runners that record an official time for Disney's Race for the Taste 10K and either the Expedition Everest Challenge presented by Champion or the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror 13K, which Scott is too afraid of, will receive the bonus medal in addition to individual race medals, a total of 3 race medals for running 2 races.
Registration. I'm not afraid to run around it, just go in it.
Well, I believe going in it is part of the after party, so. Registration for all three of these fall events are open anyway. Disney, quote, Disney is dedicated to providing guests with new interactive features to make their race experience more fun, more exciting, and more memorable, says Disney Endurance Series director Kathleen Duran. We are always looking for new ways to differentiate our Disney events by creating unique, immersive experiences. How a third medal is unique and immersive, I still don't know. Disney's fall lineup includes expanded race options. The Twilight Zone Tower of Terror 13K event will feature a 5K race as well, an exclusive post-race party. Disney's Race for the Taste 10K event will include a new 3K race designed for casual runners, more my speed, and those looking to compete in their very first endurance event. The Disney lineup includes, as we said before, there's the Expedition Everest Challenge presented by Champion on September 26th. This is the second year of this event. It's the first urban adventure race in the Endurance Series. It's a two-person team competition featuring a 5K race, a scavenger hunt, and an obstacle course designed to challenge runners physically and mentally. There's an exclusive post-race party at Animal Kingdom for the finishers, and a portion of all entry fees will benefit the Himalayan Youth Foundation and Disney's Worldwide Conservation Fund. The Race for the Taste 10K is going to take place on October 11th this year. The race takes runners through Disney's Hollywood Studios and around the 11 pavilions of Epcot's World Showcase, and guests have access to a post-race picnic that includes food samples from the Food and Wine Festival, live Disney entertainment, music, games, and face painters. Yay, face painters. And finally, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror 13K will take place on October 24th. This road race returns for its third year, and the journey includes a haunting course through the vacant streets of Disney's Hollywood Studios. And no, it's not because the park is closed. It's because everyone went to Toy Story Mania. The event includes an exclusive post-race party with family and friends. And to register for these and more Disney Endurance Series events, including the Walt Disney World Marathon taking place January 7th through the 10th, which our own Scott Smith is, visit DisneyEnduranceSeries.com. Wow, these things are becoming popular, this Disney Endurance Series. I mean, it's no secret that the Walt Disney World Marathon, the Half Marathon are extremely popular, but these other events are really spectacular. And I'm not even someone who would ever be able to complete any of these. But again, it just looks like they give you a lot for your money here, and just looks like a spectacular lineup for the fall, and really great that they've added all these other events over time so that you don't only have to be there in January. You could be here in the fall and compete in these events. I know Expedition Everest Challenge got some fantastic reviews by many last year. I know the Race for the Taste has always been popular, and I know the 3 years now that the Twilight Zone Tower Terror 13K has been running, that has been a beloved event as well. And from what I've been told, they throw one heck of a party after each and every one of these, so thumbs up to Disney on this endurance series.
Well, as we all know, there's no better place in the world to walk, run, jog, crawl through than Walt Disney World. So running a marathon just gives it a whole nother buzz. And let me tell you, I did the half marathon this year. And they are such pros at running these things. They run from pickup of your materials to selling you stuff to getting you there and running it and handling everything afterwards. And even during the race with all the volunteers, they are pros. They run this thing. And that's like a 13 mile and a 26 mile course. So for shorter ones, they're all over it. They know what they're doing like the back of their hand. So it's, you don't have to worry about anything. It's fun. And it's because they're such pros at it, they can do ones like this and get more casual people in and shorter ones. And let me tell you, you want an immersive experience, you got to wear the medal in the park. I think that's the immersive experience they're talking about.
I tried to trade people for the medal. It didn't seem to work out for me.
You run 26 miles and then have someone come up and offer you a pin for your medal.
Oh, I offered them money.
Oh,
I guess that's what eBay's for later, but I haven't seen many of those medals on eBay.
So. Although, word of advice, if you're running the half marathon, you might not want to wear your medals once people who finish the full to wear theirs, because you seem a little insignificant by comparison.
Yeah. Nonetheless, it is certainly something to be proud of if you actually complete one of these.
Oh, yeah, I'm joking. But, yeah, it's one of the greatest feelings in the world. You cross that finish line. It's awesome.
I don't know. Maybe I'll start dropping some weight, 6-7 years from now. I'll do one, maybe.
You can do it, Tom. Come on, we'll both do it.
Yes, we'll do it. Absolutely.
Team WDWNT.
There we go.
And I'm thinking of doing the half in January.
There we go.
Oh, dude, totally do the half.
We're going to have a racing team now. Look at this.
Well, I don't know if race is the operative running
team,
word.
Running team, whatever. It just tells you how adverse to any physical activity I am.
I would be more qualified for a surviving team, in that all I do is live through the race.
I want the Disney Pin Trader 10K, where you have to stop and trade for pins along the course. Then I would win. Absolutely. I need that motivation. But absolutely. We'll see. Maybe we'll have to all get down there in January and root you guys on.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Be fun. All right, well, looks like that's going to do it for this week's Walt Disney World Resort News and Rumor Report.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's WDW News Today Roundtable discussion that you voted for.
It is now once again time for a discussion that you voted for. And this time around, it's our favorite smells. And no, not those coming from Luke Manning, but our favorite smells of the Walt Disney World Resort. Because as we all know, Walt Disney World is a treat to all the senses, and smell is certainly not excluded. So first of all, joining me, none other than Luke Manning.
Oh, I'm glad you think of me so highly.
Yes. Crystal Straps.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
There we go. Scott Smith.
Hey, everyone.
Anthony Yaculo.
Hi, everybody.
And a man that knows the smell of moose very well, Kyle Duffield.
Moose head.
Not the beer. Sorry about the creature. But anyway.
Close enough.
Whatever. They smell similar.
Yes.
All right. So, it's that simple. Favorite smells of the Walt Disney World Resort. Luke Manning, we'll start with you.
All right, I could come up... I came up with three. Three that I can think of, and I know there are a lot more at the Disney World Resort, but...
Really?
Just...
There's more than three smells at all of Walt Disney World? I would have never guessed.
Wow. But these are three of my favorite. And the first one is a very pleasant smell. And that is the smell of the dining table in the Beauty and the Beast segment of Mickey's Philhar Magic.
Oh, there goes one of mine.
Yeah, I think everybody probably had
it. That's just a very pleasant smell. Now, the next one may seem a little weird, but I like the fart smell.
Oh, God.
It's tough to be a bug. I saw this one coming. Hold on. 1 minute and 58 seconds into this segment, and it has derailed horribly already.
It's not a bad smell, though. It doesn't smell bad.
I'm not touching this one.
Yeah. It's too easy.
Usually yeah. I'd say something here, but I'll let him go.
It's certainly a lot more pleasant than the chili dog.
My chili dog, man!
Thank you. All right. More of that later.
My final smell is, I think, the most symbolic smell in the whole of the Walt Disney World Resort. And I'm sure everyone else here has that on the list. And that is the smell of Rome burning in Spaceship Earth. I just love that smell. It's like a barbecue, and it smells really nice.
And more people attend that than the Celebration Barbecue at Disneyland. Topical. Crystal Straps, your favorite smells of the Walt Disney World Resort.
I think this is the most bizarre segment I've ever been a part of.
Did you used to be on Disneyland News Today, though?
I know. That's the scary part. Oh my God. One of my favorite smells would be the Blue Ribbon Bakery on Main Street.
Stole.
So that's just fantastic to just get
isn't
a whiff
it,
of that as you walk by.
Isn't it called the Blue Ribbon only at Disneyland?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
It's just the Main Street Bakery.
Ours is just the Main Street Bakery.
Bakery on Main Street, whatever. It's,
thanks.
They serve the same things.
Go back to Disneyland.
So yes, those things. I also like the smell of Illumination's Reflection of Earth, because it's really got, you get the fireworks from all around, you get that burning smell.
Since when did that show have fireworks? I'm just wondering.
So, and that's the only one that you can, you see, I feel like you're close enough to the fireworks that you can smell it. I mean, at Magic Kingdom, they're way too high, unless you're Tinkerbell, to get that whiff. So, the ones in Epcot's the ones you can get to. And lastly, I'm going to go with the smell of the city burning in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes, it does have an odor as well.
Yes.
I don't think it's as strong as the Spaceship Earth one, but...
I agree.
You're much closer to it on Spaceship Earth as well.
Yeah. It's faint enough, yet strong enough. And that's the kind of sense I like. Faint, yet strong.
Yes. Scott Smith!
Well, my favorite smell... Oh, sorry. Stuck there for a second. First off, I'm going to go with the smell of the Haunted Mansion.
Mm. Oh, what? You... God. You stole it.
Sorry. You walk in there, and that attraction is such a complete atmosphere that the smell alone gets you right in there. That kind of musty, dusty smell, it just automatically sets the mood without even, like, you could walk in there with your eyes closed, and, you know, the mood is already set for you. So the fact that so much was accomplished with one scent is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
My second smell, I'm going to go with, this might seem a little weird, it's a very, very smoky smell of Frontierland. Like, I guess it's probably because of the turkey legs, but I really like that smoky kind of barbecue-y smell. I think it fits in Frontierland. I love the turkey legs.
You would never very... eat one, but...
Well, I eat one. That's my lunch. So
that's gross.
And you run in the marathon?
It's lunch on a bone.
I don't know why you think turkey legs are disgusting. They're delicious.
Anything that has 18 layers of skin on it is disgusting.
Lunch on a bone. I enjoy it on the go. But I don't know. Yeah, maybe because I love barbecue, so it always gets me hungry. I always enjoy that smell walking through Frontierland.
You probably like the smell near Flame Tree Barbecue, then.
Yes, yes. But for me, I equate it with Frontierland because I think it fits the atmosphere. Yes, it's exactly that smell near Flame Tree Barbecue. But I like I said, just Frontierland, kind of that old-fashioned BBQ. I like, you know, just walking and... gets my appetite going. My third smell was the Beauty and the Beast segment, Be Our Guest segment from PhilharMagic, because I love that attraction, one of my favorite attractions in all of Walt Disney World. And, you know, usually you're getting assaulted with all these terrible smells and attractions. You know, when you think of attractions, very rarely, like, there's a few examples, like Horizons and this one at PhilharMagic, but usually you're afraid of a smell. Like, when... Journey into Imagination with Figment and Tough to Be a Bug. They're not pleasant smells, so to have very nice...
one of those was pleasant.
Well, you know, what else is there to say about
but
that?
But remember, in DCA, that's definitely a pleasant smell.
So that scent is great. Goes with my favorite attraction. I also want to throw this out there, but I think in general, Walt Disney World just smells better. There's like... everything is clearer, crisper. The flowers are stronger. The breeze is better. You know, when you just walk around Walt Disney World, you just want to take in a big, deep breath. Or at least that's the way I feel sometimes.
It may just be a Florida thing, but maybe. Because most of us are Northeasters, so
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no Chris, pollution. It's amazing.
Anthony Yaculo, go ahead.
All right, I have several of them. First of all, I'll go with the one that's already been stated several times, and that would be the PhilharMagic dessert table smell. It basically leaves me hungry every single time I ride that attraction. I go out and get something sweet right after that. My next smell would be the smells of the Flower and Garden show. It just fills the air of Epcot with such a beautiful scent. That, you know, it's definitely become one of my favorite smells at Walt Disney World. Next would be very similar to what Scott said about the Haunted Mansion, and that would be the old abandoned house smell of the Tower of Terror.
Yeah.
Next is the Boardwalk Bakery. Anytime I walk in there, it just smells so good. I cannot help but buy a pastry or bread of some sort. Another one of my favorites is similar to what Scott, what Chris said, the burned off fireworks smell that you get after eliminations and sometimes after wishes. It just fills the air with this just really cool burnt off smell that, I don't know, I guess I'm a little weird for liking that smell, but it's definitely one of my favorites.
I think we're all a little weird here. Some of us like the fart smell from its stuff to be a bug. So I think you're well within your right to say illumination.
The smell of the food cooking at Food and Wine.
Oh, you stole that just from me.
That just fills Epcot with just a great, great smell of all the different types of cuisines cooking. And very similar to that, the another one is the aromatic smells that you smell when you eat at Restaurant Marrakesh. Moroccan cuisine being a very aromatic cuisine, I definitely like the smells in there. And my last two, for our over 21 listeners, number one would be the smell of a freshly poured pint of Guinness at Rose and Crown. I knew you'd squeeze that in there somewhere. It definitely... I don't know what the smell is, but it's definitely a very distinct smell of just a frosty pint of Guinness.
Can't you have that smell at your local supermarket, though?
You can, but it's not the same. It's not
Epcot. It smells
Epcot.
Better at Walt Disney World.
You'd probably get arrested for opening it in the store anyway.
Probably. Last but not least, it's another very weird one, and that would have to be the incense inside the CD cases at Mitsukoshi Market. When you buy some of the Japanese CDs, they have a little two little sticks of incense in them, and they all just smell so good. And those are my favorite smells at Walt Disney World.
So Ant goes around sniffing CDs.
And beer.
At the same time.
Beer at the same time. Still not a stranger's look liking that fart smell. Kyle Duffield, your favorite smells, other than McGriddle's cooking in the morning.
Hey, those are good.
Yeah, they are good.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's mentioned soaring, so you gotta, you know, the smells of oranges and just, that just tickles the senses, I think. Scott stole the High Mansion on me, I can't believe it, but the smell in the High Mansion's just awesome.
Sorry.
It's okay, no, it's alright, but, you know, it's those certain things, you know, at any attraction like that, you know, it does have the smells, you know, it's just very unique.
I think it's just common that the older attractions, for some reason, have, you know, a smell to them. And it may be the asbestos in there.
That's what I was thinking, too. But.
Smells like old.
But there's definitely something. New attractions don't have it. Now, I don't know if it's the fact that they've aged over time, but, you know, certain smells of certain attractions just feel like they've been there forever. So I don't know if it's the way they were constructed or what, but I tend to notice, correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of the older attractions do have a certain smell to them.
Yeah.
I will agree 100%.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. Even Space Mountain has that old attraction-y kind of smell to it.
Yeah, it does. And I think pretty much everybody mentioned Rome Burning, you know. You know, it's just one of the classic smells.
Smells like Conquest.
Smells like Conquest.
I love the smell of burning villagers.
Makes me hungry.
Worse than the napalm one.
And I think, you know, majority of people also said Philharmagic, you know. Immediately after smelling, you know, all the smells in there, you gotta go run over to a shop somewhere and get something sweet. And last but not least, I'll mention the bakery on Main Street. You know, that's just something I look forward to every trip, just smelling, walking into the bakery and smelling all the fresh stuff being baked, and can't wait to try it myself. So,
it's usually what takes place in a bakery.
Yeah. Whatever. Moving
I'm
on.
Sorry, I'm being mean tonight. Anyway.
Yes, you are.
All right, well, surprisingly, my entire list didn't get pegged already, but what I had that was already mentioned, of course, the Main Street Bakery, Rome Burning and Spaceship Earth, classic. The Food and Wine Festival, which I actually didn't think anyone would get, but kudos to Anthony on that one. And, of course, Oranges on Soarin' / Horizons, since they're both Epcot. Combined. Yeah. But here are a few that were not mentioned. Number one, the Confectionery on Main Street. Usually it doesn't hit me, but last week I walked in there early in the morning, and I don't know what they were making in the back, but wow, I just wanted to stand there the rest of the day. It was fantastic. And every now and then when they're making something in the confectionery, it smells great, but I don't know if they have the machine that produces the smell on top of the confectionery. I know the bakery definitely has it, which is why a lot of people pick the bakery, because they're always emitting that smell 24 hours a day. But the confectionery, now and then, every now and then, you'll smell it. Another one. Here's a really interesting one. Banana nut muffins at Old Port Royal at Caribbean Beach.
Wow.
For some reason, every time I go in there, they are making a fresh batch of these, and they just smell unbelievable. So the last two or three times I've gone in Old Port Royal, I've walked out with a banana nut muffin. So don't ask. It just happened. another one, I can't believe no one said this. Disney's Contemporary Resort. The Grand Canyon Concourse has, again, that very old, kind of musty smell to it. As much as they've refurbished and changed things, they cannot get rid of that smell. And I'm sorry, when you step off that monorail, that is a great smell when you step off into the Grand Canyon Concourse. I don't. Am I alone in that one, or does anyone else get that?
Yeah,
I totally agree. I hope they pump that smell into Bay Lake Tower, though.
Absolutely. They're gonna That'd have be to. Cool. It's going to have to follow the bridge. another one. The mildew at Disney's Polynesian Resort. The entire main building has that mildew smell, but for some reason, it smells so great there. Again, it's one of the oldest hotels, along with the Contemporary, and I think that's why those two have these kind of smells. They've been sitting there that long, and I don't know. There's just something classic about walking into that odor.
Even mildew smells good at Walt Disney World.
Yeah, well, again, it's more of a nostalgia sort of thing.
It almost reminds me of the Pirates of the Caribbean or Grand Fiesta Tour smell a little bit.
Yes, which was going to be my final one, the cavern scene in Pirates of the Caribbean. Really, from the loading through the caverns, you get that sort of almost mildew smell, but it's almost like the Contemporary odor clashes with the Polynesian odor in that scene.
And again, classic Disney resort smell.
Exactly, and there's something about that opening scene of Pirates that has that. Again, it may not actually be to first-timers the most pleasant smell, but I think it's something about the fact that we're all just so used to it from all the times going on Pirates that it's just something you come to expect, and always got to take that deep breath in the cavern scene at Pirates. But, all right, well, I think we've covered as many smells as we could at Walt Disney World. Most good, except for Luke's, which were mostly bad. And
thanks!
So that is our favorite smells of the Walt Disney World Resort. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it looks like that is going to do it for another fantastic episode of the WDW News Today podcast. As always, I'd like to thank you for listening. You truly make this show possible and worth doing each and every week. It's now time for the big finish, giving you all the useful reminders you'll need to know in the coming week. First of all, to contact us here at the show with any questions, suggestions, comments, or concerns, or with anything you'd like to hear read on the WDWN T-Mail segment, you can email us at wdwnewstoday@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail message at 206-666-2982. If you have not done so already, please, please leave us a review on iTunes. It's a great way to let others know that there is an enjoyable Walt Disney World-based podcast out there for them. Be sure to visit the WDW News Today community forums to vote for upcoming segments of this program. We are the only fully interactive Disney fan podcast out there, and we'd really like you to make use of that. Take advantage. Hear what you want to hear on this show by voting for the segments you want on the community forums. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/WDWNT, as well as to make me a friend on Facebook, both of which are great ways to find out what's going on here at the WDWNT network. Another great way is to join our Facebook group, which is titled WDW News Today and the WDWNT Network Facebook group. Another great way to keep up with what's going on here at WDWNT. And speaking of things going on here at WDWNT, it's now time to start talking about our next fan meet, which is fan meet number 4 coming up on June 27th, and that is called Oh Illuminations. And if you want to find out why it's called that, and if you're going to be at the Walt Disney World Resort on June 27th, be sure to check out all the information on our community forums, as well as on Facebook, and as well the sidebar of WDWNewsToday.com has links to all the information about this very important fan meet number 4. Coming up on next week's show, one of the biggest in our history, episode 94, we're going to start off with the Walt Disney World Resort news and rumor report, and then after that, a very special interview brought to you via the Disney Pincast, our pin show, but trust me, this interview is much, much larger than Disney pin trading. This is a huge, huge interview that's going to be on all three shows next week. It's actually going to debut on the Pincast first on Wednesday when that show is released. So if you want to hear that interview before anyone else, download this week's Disney Pincast. If not, next Sunday here on WDW News Today, you'll hear that interview. I promise you, it is a huge guest, our biggest segment in history. So be sure to tune in. Do not miss out on this one. You will regret it. With that, it just about wraps it up for episode number 93, which means it's now time for the corniest catchphrase in all of podcasting. That's going to do it for this week. See you all next week. See ya real soon.
Thanks for taking part in another episode of the WDW News Today podcast and celebrating news today. Please join us again next week. And remember to celebrate news today and every day throughout the WDWNT network by visiting WDWNT.com. This is Brian Summer saying good night and have a pleasant tomorrow.